Happy Monday, and thanks for thumbing up the Commute Podcast, brought to you still by our presenting sponsor, National Office Systems. When it comes to making your office comfortable and functional, National Office Systems has you covered. National Office Systems has been serving Savannah and the region since 1985 and is the exclusive provider of Dirt Modular Interiors and Herman Miller Office Furniture, the finest on the planet. Learn more at natoffsys, that's natoffsys.com. Speaking of learning, State Senator Lester Jackson joins today's commute to educate us on the newly christened Freedom Creek, a ribbon of water that runs alongside Skidaway Island. Also, we discussed two significant changes to the Savannah Morning News and SavannahNow.com's opinion and commentary content. Welcome to The Commute. I'm Adam Van Brimmer, editorial page editor of the Savannah Morning News and SavannahNow.com. And this podcast posts every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with a focus on news and insights impacting us here in Savannah and the surrounding area. So we learned over the weekend that a local waterway has finally been renamed after several years of local efforts. And is a popular cut-around for a no-wake zone in the Skidaway River used by recreational boaters. As recently as last Wednesday, it was highly controversial for its then name, Runaway Negro Creek. The U.S. Board on Geographic Names remedied that last Thursday, christening it Freedom Creek. The state legislator who led the charge for the name change is Senator Lester Jackson, and he's with me now. So, Lester, after a long time coming, we have a new name for the creek that runs by Skidaway Island, and I know that that's something that you kind of brought up and kind of shepherded through. When did you first hear about it?
Well, this has been, we've talked about this creek for a number of years, and after a recent town meeting and talking to several constituents, someone said that, Senator, it's time that you do something about it. And I believe that person was Lowell Conowitz.
From Levy Jewelers.
Yes. Yep. And we started this venture 2 years ago, where we introduced a resolution to change this name. And or come up with a name that's more representative of what happened in the 1800s, where enslaved people crossed the creek in search of freedom. Started this process 2 years ago. We passed a resolution, and that resolution asked that that the federal government change the name. I did not know that at that time that it was a long process filled with a lot of red tape. Yeah. And a lot of different people had to get involved to make this major pass. I need to thank Johnny Atkinson, huh? our U.S. Senator, for his involvement. Congressman of the first, Buddy Carter, and Stanford Bishop, the congressman from West Georgia, for his involvement to make sure this resolution gets passed, and we have a creek that reflects the struggles that happened in the 1800s.
Now, you mentioned red tape. You've worked in government long enough to know that there was going to be a lot of red tape. But still, this was a little over the top, right?
This was a little over the top. We had to deal with our state archives first to make the recommendation. So you had to get them to vote and then approve it, not only with our Senate resolution to the federal archives. The state archives had to do something. The Georgia archives had to officially send a letter also, and they had to vote. And then the feds had to get involved. And then we went through the government shutdown where nothing took place because all those employees were laid off.
And yeah, they were part of that, right? Yeah, they were in the Interior Department. Yeah,
right. They were part of the shutdown and Interior, and they went through some leadership transitions and then finally they met. So it was a 2 year process, but I had a tremendous staff working on it. State Representative Craig Gordon, State Representative Al Williams were extremely helpful in our efforts of going to Washington, D.C. to make the case. It was also one of the initiatives of the Georgia Legislative Black Caucus, which I chaired for 2 years. So a lot of people got involved to make it a successful event. And now, 2 years later, it's done. And there will probably be an official ceremony with an official marking of the new name for this creek.
Good. I want to give the readers a little bit of context here. So the Medina Plantation is on Skidaway Island, and there were slaves there during the Civil War, and they crossed this creek basically to escape to the Union-occupied islands. So the Union-occupied islands at that time were where Fort Pulaski is at Cockspur and on up at Hilton Head Island. And, you know, to get there, they had to swim across the creek or find their way across the creek. At that time, it became known as Runaway Negro Creek. It is now Freedom Creek. And I want to ask you, Lester, I was a little late to this party, and when I see Runaway Negro Creek, I knew exactly the context. To me, it was these people seeking freedom. It didn't really rub me the wrong way because I kind of understood the historical context. Now it's Freedom Creek, and maybe some of that historical context is lost. How do we kind of keep what this is all about, which is the courage of those men and women who really wanted to find freedom? How do we keep that forefront with everybody?
I think the name reflects what actually happened. You got to remember, those enslaved people, many of them, could not swim. So when it was low tide, they had the opportunity to cross that creek, and I'm going to say this, and what they still had to worry about was it was still alligator infested and snake infested, and they still did that in search of freedom.
Right.
But when high tides, many of the enslaved people could not swim, so many drowned on their search of freedom. And I like to say that the enslaved people was not running away from anything, but they were in search of. So the name Freedom Creek, it when you see this and when you see this and we think about it, you think about in the 1800s, they were a group of enslaved people in search of freedom instead of running away from slave masters.
Wow, that's pretty powerful image. Thank you for that. On this path to escape, obviously we said they had to get all the way to Cockspur Island, so they go across it low tide, I assume, to what is now Isle of Hope. How much, I don't know how much of the saga you know, but how big of a trial was it for them to get from Modena Island or Skidaway Island to where they could have their freedom?
There were a number of people who talked about the history of it, who wrote the history, one of which is Michael Thurman, a former member of the Georgia General Assembly and now the CEO of DeKalb County, who was a historian in itself. He tells a story of the pathway of the enslaved people from Skidaway Island, making it now. Now, we look at it now as just a short distance, but it was a treacherous distance, mostly done at night, with slave catchers hiding in the midst, looking for the enslaved people. So their escape sometime meant their attempted escape sometime meant even death if the slave slave catchers caught you.
You had to invade
alligators in the heat of the night, snakes in the heat of the night, and then you had to cross a body of water where you yourself did not know, and that's at that time slaves could not determine whether it's going to be a high tide or low tide. So you have to risk drowning. So that journey, which from Skidaway Island to Fort Pulaski, I think it's, 4 miles?
Yeah, if you would ask the crow flies, but...
Right, yeah. which seemed like a short distance, but it was a journey in search of freedom, but it was a treacherous journey every step of the way.
Yeah. That's interesting because a lot of us know about the Underground Railroad and a lot of the pathways that were used before the war and during the war for slaves to get the freedom. And I think this is a chapter that is not told very often. And perhaps now with the renaming of the creek, it's an opportunity to really focus on that and talk it up.
Yes, sir.
Lester, thank you very much for joining me today and for your efforts on this initiative. And we'll look forward to the ceremony.
Thank you very much, sir, and I hope you have a good day.
To explore Freedom Creek, you need a boat. And while a kayak might be best, if the tides are right, you can get in there with a motorboat, like the ones available to members of Freedom Boat Club. Freedom is the easiest way to get on the water locally. You buy a membership, and their boats become your boats. No cleaning, maintenance, insurance, or storage required. Freedom Boat Club has two local locations, one in Thunderbolt and the other in Richmond Hill. Contact Freedom's Steve Sherman now at 912-226-2617 or visit freedomboatclub.com and complete the information request form. Mention this podcast and receive a free hat and t-shirt combo just for showing interest. Again, that phone number is 912-226-2617 and the website is freedomboatclub.com. Freedom Boat Club, get on the water today. So we're going to devote the last few minutes of today's podcast to a few changes made over the weekend to the Savannah Morning News and SavannahNow.com, specifically the opinion, commentary, and accent sections. The ever-popular Vox Populi moved from the accent cover to the commentary, or op-ed, page, which is more in keeping with what it is, the voice, or the opinions, of the people. In doing that, we also make a long-overdue change to our letters to the editor policy, cutting the maximum word count from 400 words to 300 words. Altogether, the changes create a different look to our daily companion content, and one I'm excited about, and I know many readers will be too. So these changes have created quite a buzz among our audience, as well as in our newsroom. We maybe didn't do the best job of communicating it across the newsroom, and I know producer Zach, Dennis, and I were... Producer Zach was, I think, maybe a little bit taken aback. He was asking me about it this morning, and Zach, obviously, Vox is something that has long been talked about in our newsroom, and you as somebody who monitors the web stats knows how popular it is. So what are you making of these changes?
I mean, it does do very well on the web. I wouldn't say that as like a mark of honor, you know. It's kind of depressing, if anything. I think, though, that it is something that we've run into a lot where people, I'm being 100% serious right now. People think that Vox Populi is a real person that works in this newsroom.
Okay.
So, and they probably still will now that they're on the opinion page. But yeah. I think that it'll be good because a lot of people think that this is the thoughts of the Savannah Morning News. Right. Maybe going to the opinion page will confuse them more. But this is very much the, if you look up the definition of Vox Populi, yeah. This is the words of the people.
We don't have a lot of Latin speakers.
No, this is call-ins. This is emails. This is just random thoughts that people have. And so I would hope that people would recognize that. But in my 2.5 years of watching this on the web, it's a little depressing, the amount of people who think that Vox Populi is a real person.
Yeah, Vox is interesting because when we first started talking about potentially moving Vox around, the whole idea was, okay, Vox is basically letters to the editor, only shorter and without attribution.
Yeah.
And the whole anonymous nature of Vox has always rubbed me the wrong way. I always have felt that, you know, if you're going to say something and you're going to criticize something, you're going to critique something, then you better be willing to put your name to it. Now, that said, people are always like, well, you do unsigned editorials all the time. Well, technically, our editorials are unsigned, except for the fact that the three names directly above the editorial, which are the editorial board, which is myself, Susan Catron, the executive editor, and publisher Michael Trainer, that's like three signatures on there. So the whole idea that it's unsigned is not accurate. Vox very much is unsigned. And it's one of those things that with an anonymity comes the whole idea you can kind of say anything. And if anything, that's kind of the scary part of it.
Well, especially in the age of the internet where people feel even with their identity, feel the need to just, you know, blurt out anything that comes to mind. As I you know, sift through our Facebook comment threads, you know, the anonymity that is kind of concerning because I think that people forget, especially with the ability to be able to say anything at any time, that words do have meaning. And so I think with Vox, it's just kind of, you know, throwing at the fan at you know, sometimes. And so having some sort of attribution would be nice, but yeah, I don't know. At the same time, I'm kind of just like, it is what it is, you know. Yeah. It's the same thing every time.
I'm curious to see if maybe we won't see a shift in the tone, because now that it is on the opinion page and people are going to it and looking at it if you have the print edition, you're opening your newspaper and you've got letters to the editor right there. You've got an op-ed column from a columnist right there next to Vox. If maybe that alters the tone, maybe that's me being a little naive and a little hopeful. Mm-hmm. But We'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, somebody would hope so, but there's also just I feel like the people who are going to write to letters to the editor will write to letters to the editor, and the people who write to Vox will write to Vox. The people who will comment on our Facebook page will comment on our Facebook page. So they all have their direct line to the newspaper, I guess,
to the community.
The community, yeah.
Yeah, that's the trick with it. What I consider a good part of these changes is the whole idea that the letters are now shorter. Now, to give everybody a little bit more context, is our letter policy for a long, long time has been 400 words. We did a redesign of our newspaper about a year ago, and in doing that, the columns got narrower, the typeface changed, some things changed. So now when you look at our letters to the editor, which run every day in print in three columns, 400 words is more than a column. So it looks very, very long when mm-hmm. you're looking at it. So the whole idea that now it's going to look a little bit shorter is a positive, but also it's going to mean we're going to get more letters in. And as somebody who writes for a living, I can tell you if you can write concisely, you're going to be more engaging anyway. And I think that's kind of what we're shooting for with the letters. We've seen in my opinion, a big change in tone with the letters mm-hmm. Over the last year. People are sticking much more to the issues. There's a lot less personal attacks. And we've seen the number of people submitting letters has grown exponentially, which has been a good thing. But as somebody who handles the letters online, where maybe the length really doesn't matter, how do you feel about the whole idea of having shorter letters?
I think it's fine. It's one of those things where, you know, on Twitter, you have X amount of words to kind of get your opinion across. And so with a lot of these issues, sometimes people will just rattle on forever and ever. So I think having this limit where it's like you have to clarify your opinion or your point in this amount of words is that's good for people. People need that. People need a little structure when it comes to especially some of the issues. The thing I do like about the letters to the editor, at least recently since you've taken over, is that it seems to be, I mean, you have these instances, but I think for the most part, it's been people who are engaged with a lot of the local issues. Like it's a lot of more of a community conversation rather than digging into like the national level. You know, you do have some of that, you know, people giving their thoughts on what the president's doing, mm-hmm. but for the most part, it's relatively community focused, which I like because a lot of the times you get so much of the national talk that it's right. kind of nice to remind you that there are a lot of local issues that are much more prescient and affect you probably more directly than what he's doing up in Washington.
Right. Well, yeah, that's kind of the trick when you're compiling these things is to try to space those out.
Yeah.
You know, are you going to space them out or are you going to put them all at once?
It's just encouraging. Like I think I'm much more, I'd rather listen to people kind of discuss the local community issues and stuff happening around Savannah rather than people just kind of rattling off, you know, again, it goes back to, you almost just need to leave those for Vox because it's perfect in like right. a one line, like, this is how I feel right. rather than the letter to the editor. It's much, you know, there's a little bit more, you have that room for nuance, even if it's a little tighter.
Well, I want to thank all the listeners and by extension the readers for your patience as we kind of go through this evolution. And thanks to Zach for coming in and helping me talk through it a little bit.
Yeah, no problem.
So that's a wrap for Monday. Let me thank our guest, State Senator Lester Jackson, as well as producer Zach Dennis for helping me give some insights on the recent opinion content changes to the newspaper and our website. Also, thank you to our sponsors, National Office Systems and Freedom Boat Club. Please support them as they support this podcast. And for you commute listeners out there who don't subscribe to the Savannah Morning News or SavannahNow.com, take advantage of a special offer just for you. Get 1 month's digital access to our local news coverage for free, and then pay just $7.99 a month after that. Go to savannahnow.com/digital-only offer. That's savannahnow.com/digital-only offer to take advantage of this limited time offer. You have been listening to the Commute Podcast. We'll talk to you again Wednesday.